it's nearly the end of Lent. And you will remember that I was with you on the first Sunday of Lent when I confessed my sin to you and told you that I'd given up nothing for Lent. Nothing whatsoever. And then went on to say, well, instead of giving up, we've been clearing out. And the clearing out has continued all through Lent. I'm hoping it might be our last trip to the tip tomorrow. There's then a charity shop run to do, and then we've got a charity shop collection of all the furniture that we can't take with us. We're nearly there. We don't have a date for moving yet, but in the next month or so. But I shared with you, and I'm slightly disappointed, I shared with you on the first Sunday of Lent, there were certain things that were precious to us that we hadn't found a new home for, including our beautiful antique dining table. We've had no offers. Please, can you be praying? We'd love to find a good home for a dining table, and maybe it would be a blessing to you. Enough of me. We're entering the most extraordinary week, the most unique week in the whole history of the human race. We know the story so well, don't we? It was partly why I wanted to have the gospel reading first, just to get us, well, the liturgy had got us into the mood, but the reminder of what happened on that first Palm Sunday. But there are interesting details in that reading that we might just skip over. The donkey. What were we told about the donkey? A colt, young, male, never been ridden. Would you want to get on a donkey that had never been ridden before? I wouldn't recommend it. It's a very, very little sign of who Jesus is, that the donkey would be pleased to take Jesus without, excuse me, stopping, kicking, complaining. We pass over that little detail. We are used to changes of power. In the last week or so, we've heard of change in leadership in the government in Wales, in Ireland. And it's not that long ago that we celebrated the coronation of King Charles III. A change in power from one leader to another. And all of those, especially the coronation, were encapsulated in the most remarkable processions and liturgy and events that made it clear to every person here but around the world that this new king was indeed the king. Military processions, horses, bands, everything you could imagine was encapsulated in that event. Here in Jerusalem, 2,000 odd years ago, there was to be another change in kingship. But none of the usual signs were there. It was a colt, a donkey, not an imperial horse. There were no military bands simply a ragtag group of locals singing and chanting and waving palm branches because they were available and to hand. Jesus gets on the donkey at the top of the Mount of Olives. Some of you will have been there. You will have stood in that place and you will have walked down the hill. And as you walk down the hill, you remember those events of Palm Sunday. Who's done it? Some of you have, I'm sure. It's a little bit dangerous. It's a little bit slippery. If it's wet, or if you happen to be there when it's snowing, it's treacherous. Yes, it does snow in Jerusalem, not very often, but it does. And here was Jesus coming down on a donkey who had never carried a person before down this rather precarious road. And what does the reading tell us that Jesus did? He entered Jerusalem. So coming down the hill, past the that amazing collection of ancient Jewish tombs, through one of the gates, it doesn't mention which one, doesn't really matter, but through a gate into the city. And where does he go? To the temple. It's really interesting. Goes to the temple and looked around at everything. For the Jewish people, this is the Passover coming up. Crowds and crowds of people would be coming into Jerusalem to gather at the temple. If you were able to travel, that was your duty, to be there for Passover. Jesus wouldn't be the only person arriving in the city that day or in the next few days. Thousands and thousands converging on the temple. And why converge on the temple? Because that's the meeting place of God and human beings. That's where we're told God dwells, in the Holy of Holies. So if you were a Gentile, you could approach, but only to the outermost court. If you were a Jewish believer, you could go in a little bit further. If you were a priest, you could go a little bit further still, but you couldn't get past the curtain unless you were the high priest and it was your turn on the most holy of days to go into the Holy of Holies to sacrifice. Jesus came and looked around. And the extraordinary thing is that the temple changes this week from being a place to being a person. The temple is now Jesus himself. It is not a single place on a single hill in Jerusalem. Well, the old temple, of course, has gone. There's no need to rebuild it. It would be a waste of time because God would not dwell there any more than he dwells in any other physical place, because the meeting place of human beings with God is in the person of Jesus Christ, and only in the person of Jesus Christ. And now we can meet this Jesus anywhere and everywhere. There is now no need to travel to find God. God meets us precisely where we are. And if that isn't a reason to shout Hosanna, I'm not sure what is. The meeting place with Jesus is where you are. It's here. It's where you're going to be tomorrow, and Tuesday, and Wednesday, and Thursday, and Friday. Wherever you are, God is with you. And you have access to him everywhere, at any time. That's extraordinary. You may have thought it odd that we had the Old Testament reading after the New. That's not our usual tradition. But I hope you were slightly surprised by it. Because actually, did it not reveal prophetically some of those events of Palm Sunday, when the psalm itself was written, who knows exactly when, but more than 1,000 years earlier? Isn't it extraordinary? It was one of the psalms written supposedly by King David and used for the processions at Passover to Jerusalem. It was a processional psalm. And so that's why at the beginning there's this response: give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. And everyone replies, his love endures forever. Let Israel say. Let the house of Aaron say. Let those who fear the Lord say. Let Meadgate say.
His love endures.
And here we see not only a psalm used for generations in the processions to the temple to meet God at Passover, but we hear a prophecy of the day when the Son of David, the Messiah, would be the one who is met. And there are some really interesting little glimpses about the gates. Remember how far you could go depending on who you were, the outer court or a little bit further in, or a little bit further in again if you're a priest. All of that disappears. The gate is open to everyone who shouts Hosanna. Because Hosanna means save us. We miss it. We think often Hosanna is simply an indication of worship. But it's a cry. Yes, it is in terms of worship, but it's asking the Lord to save us, to meet with us, to lead us in deliverance. And this psalm would also have been used at other times of the year when we wanted to celebrate deliverance and freedom and success. But then there's this little verse 22. Why on earth is this here? The stone the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. The stone the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. What on earth is that about? Well, it's thought that the crucifixion, we know it, the crucifixion happened outside the city walls of Jerusalem. We think it happened in a disused quarry. And if you go to Jerusalem today, if you go to the Holy Sepulchre, which contains the tomb and is the place of resurrection, you will find in there, behind a glass window, a stone with a crack right down the middle of it. It's underneath Golgotha, the place of the skull, the place of crucifixion. And it's believed that the cross of Jesus was placed in this stone that the builders had rejected. It was still there in the quarry. It hadn't been taken out because it was imperfect. Isn't that the most extraordinary detail that the psalmist could foresee without knowing? A crucial detail of this most amazing week. I think we can say that this week encapsulates all of human existence. I asked you at the beginning how you were feeling. Wonderful. A little bit sad. Some of you are mourning the loss of friends and family. Today, we can rejoice, joining in the crowds, hailing Jesus on. And we will be back to that position of praise in a week's time on Easter Sunday morning. But between now and then, we go through a really difficult journey of preparation. I hope many of us will be here on Maundy Thursday as we wait for our salvation on Good Friday, there's a wonderful young man crawling around at the back who hasn't got a clue what I'm wittering on about, and he doesn't care at all. Oh yeah. Ah, and a round of applause. Thank you. Where was I? And then on Good Friday, the place of desolation and death, and Holy Saturday, that time of emptiness and waiting, of wondering whether anything good can come, whether life can start again. So however you're feeling this morning and however you feel this week, there's a place for you to acknowledge that before God, to know that He has been there first and understands exactly how you are, and that He will lead you on your journey through all of these different emotions and feelings to a place of healing and resurrection. Which brings us back to the theme of Palm Sunday, which is about praise. We're going to sing again in just a moment, but in the silence, I want to invite you to offer your praise to God for His most extraordinary plan that was laid out before the foundation of the world and came into being for us with the birth and the life and the death and the resurrection of Jesus. What amazing love from God to us in His Son. Let's offer our thanks and our praise. And in a moment, the band will lead us in sung worship again.